It's KHUM. My name is Mike Drunkers, along with host Kim Kemp. We've got Chuck Rogers.
Hi, Mike.
Who you interviewed Eric Eschger, the economist from Humboldt State.
Yeah, interesting guy.
Also joining us in the studio, it's very nice to meet Jennifer Budwig. How are you, Jennifer?
Great, thank you.
You work for a local bank, and you did a sizable amount of research on this topic. And I think you and I have something in common, which is just by the tone of the way you approached it, you were not necessarily convinced that marijuana was a massive, massive economy here in Humboldt. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that would be a fair statement. I think that when I started the research, I kind of had some preconceived notions of maybe where I would land in terms of, you know, estimates and so forth. And as I continued to do more and more research, you know, it continued to show that I think that there was a lot more out there than what I had originally anticipated. Again, all of this is subjective, so it's very difficult to obtain hard data on, you know, this particular topic. But just as an example, in getting the information from the Sheriff's Department in terms of eradication factors, you know, 200,000 plants a year over the last 3 years, I mean, that's a lot of marijuana that has been eradicated. And if you look at that from a percentage standpoint, the numbers can definitely be significant. And I think that was one of the things that really, really caught my eye. And I was very surprised at, you know, the other thing too about the eradication factors is that, you know, a camp originated in 1983, and during the camp season of 4 months, they had 2 helicopters and 2 full crews, the full entire 4 months. And now with the dwindling resources, camp is basically here for about 2 weeks, and there's only 1 helicopter. And they're still getting more and more marijuana every year. So even though the resources have continued to go down, the numbers that they're eradicating have gone up. So I think from a percentage standpoint, it's pretty much the same across the board.
And we want to talk about eradication because today's North Coast Journal, coincidentally, has a really interesting piece about that. But first, let's take it over to Kim Kemp. Nice work, by the way, Kim.
Thank you.
On your first your radio documentary debut. Why don't you talk a little bit about how conservative these numbers are. And while you do that, people can know that they can join the conversation by calling 786-KHUM or the live chat over at lostcoastoutpost.com.
Well, you said you were surprised at how big the numbers were. And in fact, I was surprised at the number. I thought it would be bigger. I come from Southern Humboldt, and as Ernie Branscombe likes to say, it's 80% of the economy in Southern Humboldt. And it's not just the growers, and it's not just the people who trim. It's the people who change your tire and the waitress who gets an extra tip. All those people make money because of marijuana.
And Chuck, you talked with Eric Eschger,
yeah,
who's again, on sabbatical, but he is working on trying to get data from data
exactly
providers. He painted a fairly grim picture if legalization crashed the price. Why don't you talk about that?
Well, I asked him, you know, given all these numbers, if some of this money went out of the local economy and the regional economy, would we be talking about a recession? And he said, no, you could use the D word. So he's talking about depression. Now, the interesting thing about what Dr. Eschger is doing, as an economist, he's usually used, as bankers are, usually used to using very hard data that's been gathered over a long period of time, and it does not exist. So what he's trying to do is to come up with some sort of economic research model so that he can drill down a little bit more specifically here so that people going forward, especially planners, and he works with supervisors and various cities around here, can make some informed decisions, which he says that they can't do right now.
Who can speak to that with regards to the planning? I mean, I remember, Kim, when you and I first met to discuss should we do a show that, you know, talks about marijuana's footprint on Humboldt or within Humboldt or however you want to phrase that. At the very next table was Supervisor Mark Lovelace, and he was meeting with people talking about the future.
Charlie Custer and someone else.
I don't know if we're supposed to say who is.
Oh.
But regardless, you're coming from just such a different perspective. What do you think, what would happen if we saw another price crash like we saw last year? And coming from SoHum, what did that look like on the ground?
What would a price crash look like on the ground?
What did it look like?
Oh, when we watched it happen, people were panicking. And what I saw coming into the county was massive pallets of soil, semis full of soil because people started doubling, tripling, quadrupling, putting huge, huge greenhouses in or big, huge gardens or putting more indoors in. Everybody seemed to be talking about how much more they were growing this year than last year in order to make up the loss.
So volume to make up for the lower price.
Quantity to make up for it.
Right.
Alfred, do we have a call?
No.
No, okay. All right.
Question, though.
Oh, we do have a question. What was the question?
Okay. Ernie from Reno would like to know, how does Humboldt County determine who is a medical marijuana grower and who is just a regular grower?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Kim, you can speak to that.
Well, a medical marijuana grower has to have a 215, that's the term that everybody calls it. It means that with Prop 215 that came in 1996, that you grow for medical reasons. You've gone to a doctor and you've gotten your reason to grow medicine. Then a medical marijuana grower sells their excess medicine. I'm not sure if sells is the right term there. There's probably a better legal term than that, to dispensaries or possibly other people who need it, other patients, for money. And that's how anyone else is not a medical marijuana grower. There's a lot of people using 215s to also cover black market marijuana.
Looks like we've got a call over here on one. Rob, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Hello. I just wanted to point out a couple of things. Supply and demand is definitely a fact, and that's, you know, what's happening. A lot of people are overproducing. But besides all that, I just wanted to point out that if we did legalize marijuana, that it's such a bigger picture than growing pot for medical use or recreational use. There's so many things that could be done with this plant, you know, from biomass conversion to switching up, you know, our fuels that we put in our vehicles. You know, there's so many things that come from this plant.
There's an initiative coming up for 2012, the California Cannabis Health and Hemp Initiative, that I think tries to address some of that.
Yeah, so I just wanted to point out that, you know, Mendocino with all their, you know, vineyards wouldn't be like that if alcohol was illegal, you know?
Right. Sure.
And we have all this land. We have all these people who are able to work, to grow, to, you know, produce, you know, the pulp, the buds, the leaves, the, you know, the seeds, everything that goes to make so many different products, you know?
Rob, thank you very much for the call. Thank you very much.
It's jobs. All I see is a lot of jobs coming.
No doubt. And there was, Chuck, go ahead.
Well, that's a very good point. In fact, I asked Dr. Exeter a little bit about that. You know, what would happen? And we're going to play that outtake that was not in the show. That's a very good point that Rob brings up. And the question is, from an economic standpoint, were it legalized, would some of it move closer to larger consumer markets to get rid of overhead and transportation? Let's hear what he says.
The advantage of Humboldt County or in the Emerald Triangle is its remoteness. And there's a culture here that is more accepting and tolerant of marijuana production. It's the distance from the main consumers. I mean, if you look statewide, the people consuming marijuana tend to be young people in urban areas. That's not us here. So that production for export to the major urban areas, that has been bolstered certainly by the fact that it's illegal and other areas aren't producing marijuana. If that illegality goes away, or the stigma associated, or it's more quasi-legal, then one possibility is production springs up elsewhere in maybe Oakland or in the Central Valley on large farms. You can tell a whole lot of stories. There's a lot of unknowns in how it might play out.
That's, again, Eric Eschker, one of the outtakes from that. And Kim, you've been more in touch with people who are trying to streamline, you know, the what if pot becomes fully decriminalized or fully legalized, people like Anna Hamilton and that sort of thing. How organized are they?
Well, there's an initiative that's there's four initiatives that are coming up for 2012 on legality, on legalizing marijuana. And I would say that they're pretty strong and pretty well supported, some of them are. And on top of that, there's a regulate medical marijuana one that is also being organized by people from Northern California. I would organized as a little strong, being they're at the table discussing what's happening.
It looks like we've got a full bank of phones. If you want to join the conversation, 786-KHUM, 786-5486. Let's go to Jacob. Jacob, you're on the air. What's your question?
First of all, I really don't have a whole lot of questions. I just want to say how appreciative I am of you people bringing this program to all the people of this area, and not only to the people of the area, but people everywhere, to understand where we're coming from. And we're not just trying to grow a whole bunch of pot and sell it for money. We're trying to create a way of life for people that are genuinely ill and to try and cure them. Not necessarily cure them, but help them with their ailments.
Well,
so there's...
Go ahead.
Okay, so first of all, I want to say, coming from a medicinal grower's way, that, you know, there's all I want to do is try to help the people. Money is secondary, and if our community can come up with something that can help the medicinal community come up with an economical community for us, then I think we can all be in a general sort of happiness.
Well, thank you so much for the call. Thank you so much. And that was Jacob. We've got a bunch of people on hold. We will get to your question as soon as we can. First, let's jump over to a question from the Lost Coast Outpost live chat, which you can, if you can't get through on the phones, you can go over there. Does Jennifer Budwig, who is our banker, who did some research, she's in the studio with us now, have any sort of idea how things might break down regionally? How much of the economy is in SoHum? How much is in Arcata Grow Houses? Jennifer, what do you think?
That's a great question, but unfortunately, I wasn't able to obtain any kind of data that does break it down on a regional basis. One of the things that we talked about in the prior clip was looking at, maybe gross in terms of how much is grown in Humboldt County as a whole. But a secondary piece of the research I did was trying to quantify it in terms of, you know, how much money is actually spent in Humboldt County. So I did look at it from that aspect, but not on a regional basis. I mean, the assumption obviously is that it's more in southern Humboldt. Kim was saying 80%, but I wouldn't know that.
Well, that was going to be my question to you. Do you have it? I think we can all assume that it's a much larger percentage in southern Humboldt than it is in the northern half of the county, for sure. Don't we know?
That would be an assumption.
We can make that assumption. Yeah. And which brings up the question: is where do you go going forward? How do you mitigate any future problems should some of this money be sucked out of this economy? And you know, I know a lot of people are talking about that. There aren't any real good answers yet.
You know, something that I thought of on the way up here is when I first wrote my first column in 2007 that just barely breathed the word marijuana, and I panicked, but I was talking about the smells that I smelt as I drove down the road that I live on and how wonderful marijuana smelt. And at that time, that was where I smelt it, in the Back Hills. But now, as I drove here, as I drove through on the freeway through the town of Riedel, the entire town of Riedel smells like marijuana. It's spreading or moving beyond just southern Humboldt. It is permeating the whole community, the whole county.
Well, Mike, let me just put something out there for the people who are listening, if they want to call in and ask questions about, because I'm curious about this. A good friend of mine, Don Anabuski, who works in the economic development field, sent me an email because he knew this was going to be happening, and he suggests, what if those now realizing financial surpluses in the marijuana economy, I'm just quoting here, were to invest for the long haul in new businesses and ventures that can withstand the changes that will be coming to us, using some of that money to reinvest then in this economy? Because we have a little bit of time. We have no idea how much.
Right.
But we have some. And we should be doing something now, shouldn't we?
Don't you think there are quite a few? I mean,
well, again, there are no numbers.
Well, of course. I mean, who's going to say, and I got my money exactly. from growing and now I'm investing it in a business? I mean,
incidentally, there is a drinking game going on. I'm being
oh,
told.
What are we supposed to say?
Every time somebody here says, we don't really know.
We don't really know. We don't really know.
Take a shot. We don't really know.
We don't know.
Do we know? We don't know. No.
Our phone number is 786-5486. That's 786-K-HUM, and we've got about 10 minutes left if you wanted to get your call in. Let's take another comment from the Lost Coast Outpost. Comment from Pat. Quote, I am pro-legalization and have no problem with mom-and-pop personal use gardens. I'm involved periodically in the eradication of marijuana gardens. Unfortunately, the vast majority of commercial growers are also abusing the system by claiming unemployment benefits, not paying taxes, and participating in programs such as a PG&E care program. Most of the growers who I encounter here in Mendocino provide nothing to the community. Kim, what do you think?
I think that probably, first of all, yes, that is appalling. Second of all, I think that the people who are probably contributing to the community that are growers, you probably don't know they're growers. They're the person that's running that nonprofit that you're so impressed with. They're the person who's volunteering at the soup kitchen. They're the person, the teachers, the parent that comes in and volunteers in your kid's classroom. Those are people that are there helping that you don't know are growers. But yes, the first people who use the care program for PG&E, that's appalling.
And speaking of Mendocino, we should definitely talk about what has happened since we wrapped production on the documentary, The Humboldt Chronicles, which is to say we talked about the Mendocino Zip Tie program. What's the latest on that?
Zip. They killed it.
Yeah. They went gangbusters after Matt Cohen, who yes. seemed to be...
The poster child.
Yeah. He just seemed to be doing it, as best as he could. Jennifer, coming from your standpoint, I mean, you work for a bank. You have to deal with large numbers and you have to deal with economics. Does it concern you as a banker to see the government's behavior when it's so erratic?
Well, it's interesting, you know, in terms of the difference in the direction, you know, that has been taken since July of this last year. When I wrote the paper, my research paper, it was through April of 2011. And then since that time, July of 2011 is when they came out taking a different stance, you know, from the original directive from Obama administration in 2009, who basically said that if you're complying with state law, we'll leave you alone. And for the most part, I think that did happen. But on occasion, you would see, you know, the DEA would come in and they would, they would bust folks on occasion. But I think that for the most part, they did comply with that directive. And then in July, that switched gears. And basically, from what I understand, they went ahead and sent out letters to any dispensaries that were within 1,000 feet of a school, a playground, or a park, and gave them 45 days to close down their business. And those letters went to the owners of those dispensaries as well as the property owners. And it was very interesting to see them to make that change. And I wasn't able to read any information as to why the switch, but I think that it brings up a very, very important point. And that is that the Fed law trumps state law, you know, every single day. And that's one of the things that I think with legalization, that so much of what we're going to feel on a short-term impact, even potentially a long-term impact, is going to be what the DEA stance is if and when it's legalized. You know, if they come in and they sue the state of California for legalizing it, or if they say, you know, it's okay to go ahead and grow, but know that we're going to come in and bust you, there's definitely going to be a lot less growth going on a commercial basis because of that threat.
We've got some people on hold, and I want to get to them, but real brief, just if you could give the short version of the answer. You have been giving this talk now to various civic groups. You know, mm-hmm. you've been in Fortuna and talking to rooms like Rotary Clubs and, you know, chamber mixers and giving this talk. What's the reception been like?
You know, it's actually been very, very good. Initially, when I wrote this paper, it was really for my own use. It wasn't necessarily to go out in public and talk about this at all. In fact, I was trying to stay under the radar for the most part because it is a very controversial topic. But the thing that I found is through the process of doing the research, there were a lot of things that I found out, you know, that I felt was just really good information to to share with the general public. And initially I was, I had had some invitations to do interviews and things like that, and I declined them. But then as I spoke at a couple of different clubs and organizations, the feedback was so positive. You know, I think it's just more awareness and, you know, sharing that information that I was able to obtain through the process of doing the research, because it's, you know, something that, you know, most people refer to it as the big white elephant in the room.
Yeah.
And we all know that, you know. So I think that, and the other thing too is when I was doing my research, I tried to be very unbiased. You know, I had... I was just trying to, you know, come up with as much as I could from a factual standpoint and come up with some deductions based on some reasoning. But it's been very positive, the reception.
Let's go now to Anna. She is calling in. Where are you calling in from, Anna? Hello, Anna?
Hi, hey, this is Anna Hamilton from What's
Hi, Anna.
After Pot.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
I am so proud of my community because everyone has really stepped up to the plate, and I don't have anything to do except calling you guys in, and thank you. I do think that it's an election year that we're going to be played upside down and inside out, and I've kind of taken the attitude of the 30-year-olds that it's a very cynical situation. Thank you for... doing the research and keeping it up even in the face of this federal prosecution. But I heard a very informed rumor yesterday that the state of California Attorney General has declined to apply for the federal DEA funding, and that the woman who's been pushing against our state self-determination to decide her own future based on our resources has lost her money.
Huh.
I hope this is true. And a couple of more comments, if you don't mind me going backwards over
We're running real low on time, and we've got some other calls we got to get to. If we could just pick one comment and you go with that one.
Control of production is the key to success. If we can create a scarcity for our product, and I want to say what our product is, because I think we're a little confused, it's air quality.
Interesting. Interesting. Air quality. All right. Well, Anna, we're going to check in with you hopefully on future episodes, because you're certainly dialed into this world. We're going to go now to Laurel. She is calling in from Mendocino County. Laurel, go ahead.
Hi. This is Laurel Krause from Mendo Coast Current.
Hello.
How you doing, Kim?
How you doing?
Well, I just had a really great idea. You were talking about, I heard it discussed earlier, where we were talking about how we can come together and use grower monies to do things as communities. And I was thinking that one of the little dirty little secrets about growers is they use a lot of energy to create the good medicine.
That's true.
Whether it's indoor or, you know, sometimes there's even messes that are made, but that's not what we're talking about.
Well, that's true. And again, that's a huge elephant in the room. There's been some news on that. I think Epic was on KHSU talking about that this week.
It was an excellent show.
Yeah, I definitely
had this idea where we could just come together and start doing solar panels and building our own grid and doing it all with alternative energy, with wind, with, you know, solar thermal. You know, people can check it out, and they can just Google Mendo Coast Current. There's an idea here for Mendocino County specifically.
So you're already working on this?
Well, I have a blog called Mendo Coast Current. It's not the .com, but if you Google it, you can see it. And it's been exploring alternative energy since 2007.
Well, we'll have to check that out. We've got a couple more questions, and then we're out of time. Thank you for the call, Laurel. We'll go over to the chat here, and Goldie asks a question for Jennifer. Has there been any feedback from public officials in regards to her data?
No, I have not gotten any feedback from public officials. There are a couple of groups that I'm going to be probably talking with that would fall under that category. And, you know, I think that one of the things that, again, it's all about information. And I think that that's an excellent question, because I think that that is definitely a group that needs to know and understand you know, everything that I've learned through this process, I just feel like I'm so much more informed. And information is key, I think, to making those decisions that are going to, you know, drive the future economy here.
Well, it certainly seems like their eyes are opening slowly. We'll take we're out of time. You know, we'll take two more. Jimmy from Soham, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. So I was hoping you guys could comment. There's been news lately that the federal government in 2007 had taken out patents on compounds and extraction methods for medicinal purposes of cannabis and cannabinoids. And it seems that they have also granted access to pharmaceutical companies just recently to produce trial drugs based on European drugs. This seems to be greatly contradicting their attitude, and I was wondering if you guys could comment on that.
All right. Thank you.
That is definitely something that people who are interested in marijuana as a medicine don't understand, why it's listed as a Schedule I drug when at the same time parts of it are being patented by the U.S. government or agents within to make medicine. So how can it be both? That just doesn't work.
All right. And our final call for the show is going to come from Martin in Soham. Martin, we've got about 15 seconds. Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a comment when you guys were talking about the market crash, and no one's really ever like pointed out that probably the reason why the market has crashed is because there's so many people growing like a sub-quality product that it just drives the price down. And then if all the people who are up here like that are considered to be 215 people would actually start doing something good in producing a quality product, they would actually help them out. And anybody who says that they're doing this for medical reasons is probably just blowing smoke up your butt, because that's just not true. Everybody who's growing pot is doing it for money, like hands down. That's just the way that it is. So that was all my comment.
Thank you very much, Martin. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah.
And that is going to do it for the Humble Chronicles. And our show has been called How Much Money? You can download the podcast from iTunes. I believe it's up right now. You can go over to LostCoastOutpost.com or KHUM.com and download it from there as well. We'd love your thoughts. Leave a comment on KHUM's Facebook page or on the Lost Coast Outpost. We want to thank FromBolt. We want to thank the Law Office of Peter Martin. We want to thank Emerald Triangle. We want to thank Trim Scene Solutions. Thank you to Jennifer Budwig for being here. Thanks to Alfred Esparza, producer Chuck Roger, Kim Kemp is here, and my name is Mike Dronkers. Amy is coming up next, and stay tuned for her. She's got a good show. Thank you guys very much.